This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson.
This is the story to end all stories.
Well, this next story may sound like science fiction, but there is some real science fact that has some people very worried.
In the months leading up to pressing the on button of the Large Hadron Collider, the press and even more the blogosphere were buzzing with apocalyptic speculation. Some people out there think it'll form a black hole that will swallow the Earth.
Some fear it could lead to the end of the world.
My God! Right out of Dante's Inferno.
There was even a lawsuit trying to prevent it from opening.
The most destructive force in the universe, Harry. Nothing can escape it, not even light.
On September 10th, the day it powered up, I got an instant message from my daughter in Japan. So, she said, the Earth didn't end, huh, Dad? I had to tell her she shouldn't relax quite yet. They hadn't started the actual smashing of particles. We asked the novelist Lydia Millet to come up with her own scenario for underground surprises outside Geneva. She is the author of O Pure and Radiant Heart, a novel about the Manhattan Project. Actress Martha Plimpton reads Lydia Millet's story.
When Telford first took the job, they had just made the black hole visible, and celebrities were beginning to schedule visits. His console was near the window, so he could watch. Like orbit tourism, the window was only for the best positioned, billionaires, Nobel winners, and heads of state. It was a precisely calibrated routine. They were ushered through security with a phalanx of armed men, and stood at the window for exactly 5 minutes. He was reminded of children at zoos. The hole was their Siberian tiger, pacing behind a wall of glass. The hole was smaller than a pinprick, measurable only by instruments. What they saw was a computerized enhancement, the size of a baby's head, a dark sphere described on its perimeter by swirling shards of light. It was the end of the world show, the apocalypse in a jar. The quantum equations that held it captive were Greek to him. Telford was a code tech, a peon, one foot soldier among hundreds. Conditions could not vary in the chamber by so much as a particle. Back in 08, when the Large Hadron came online and produced first the Higgs field, then the hole, there was terror. The lab techs hit event horizon stasis by a lucky accident. Now the capture industry was a vast government. To the rest of the world, the hole was a doomsday unit. But to Telford and the other code techs, it was Fido. Someone had named it that decades ago, and the nickname stuck. When there was a first-level alert in the chamber, they said, "Fido's barking." When it was second level, they said, "Dog bite, dog bite." He'd never been around for a third, though it had happened once in the 40s. What you never wanted to see was a fifth. You wouldn't see it for long. His first day, someone had talked him through it, the usual black hole meets man scenario, your body stretched thin as a nanowire. Some of the techs fantasized in the break room about death by Fido, shot the breeze with a morbid gusto about how it could be. Telford thought it was juvenile, as irrelevant as the God particle freaks who gathered outside the buffer zone with their prayers and offerings, calling on the agency to shut down the chamber. To them, the hole was the second coming. The hole had come to gather them up to heaven, and containment stood between them and the rapture. There were free hole factions in all the faiths, even Buddhists who believed the hole should be freed and nirvana attained. Terrorists was how the agency classified them, but they claimed religious freedom. It was the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO today, due in a couple of minutes. It had taken him 7 years to clear the wait list. Generals were fairly low on the totem pole after the presidents and CEOs. Security distrusted military leaders, though no tourist of any kind had ever tried sabotage. It was a lab tech who was responsible for the third-level incident. Anyway, if you really wanted to bring out the hole, it was the power grid you had to target. There, too, there were thousands of backups, operated by corporate and national blocs. Before the singularity, technology and nature had been opposed, like science and religion. There were tree huggers who wanted to stop development. There were monkey wrenchers back then. Now everything that lived depended on containment, from the blue whales to the blue-green algae. It made life simple, Telford believed. Simplicity was what the whole had given them. He gazed at the projection, the light spiraling. The whole was a kind of inversion of the Milky Way. It came to Telford as he waited for the general that what he felt for the whole was love. The whole was everything and nothing, and he and his fellows were charged with its care. Without them, the Amazon would vanish. The Himalayas, ships on the towering sea, the iron core of the planet, the Grand Canyon, alligators and early man, all of it, not only gone, but gone as though it had never existed. He was a lucky man. He saw the general enter in his uniform and brass. The general stood at the window as the clock ticked. Telford could not see his face, only the stillness of his posture. The general gazed at Fido. 1 minute, 2, 3 minutes, 4. Finally, the general inclined his head. It was the briefest of bows.
Martha Plimpton reading Telford, a piece of fiction written just for us and you by Lydia Millett. Millett's new novel is called How the Dead Dream. I'm Kurt Anderson in Studio 360, and I want to return now to Jana Levin, an actual scientist. I asked her about the chances that this new gadget might actually create a black hole on Earth.
Well, it's interesting because you can never say never, actually, and the best things we can say is that it's incredibly, ridiculously, extremely unlikely that anything like that can happen. But you have to remember that in these quantum laws, it is physically possible for me to pass through that wall without destroying either myself or the wall. And yet none of us fear that it's going to happen, that we're going to fall through the floor. We all take elevators and we live our lives all the time because this probability is so absurdly low that it's never really going to be observed in our lifetime. But can I say it's a physical impossibility? I cannot. The fear and hysteria is very interesting because actually we have a lot of really dangerous technology that's very simple, like, you know, fire. and it's really hard to imagine going through life prohibiting certain advances on the basis of very absurd fears.
No, but apocalypse, I mean, the downside is big.
Yeah, the downside is big. But there are particles that are hitting the Earth's atmosphere right now that have those energies and higher. And there are not little black holes being created in the atmosphere.
Can you imagine that a year, 5, 10 years hence, that we will have crossed some quantum line of feeling like, boy, we really understand it now. And this has happened so quickly that we will sort of have a different sense of our own knowledge of how the universe works that will change us as people?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's really been a very short time since Einstein had this huge revolution. It's
100 years.
It's 100 years, yeah. 100 years since special relativity and not quite 100 years since the general theory of relativity, and which changed the way it gave us a scientific notion of the Big Bang. It introduced us to the very idea of black holes, and quantum mechanics was also just burgeoning at that time. So the realization, if you ask, what does that mean for our worldview and how do we view ourselves? The realization that we are literally dirt, you know, debris, ash left over from the Big Bang, and that 95% of it is other, I think is a tremendous change from what we thought maybe 10 years ago. And the LHC is going to hopefully push us even further past those boundaries.
Jana Levin, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Jana Levin is a novelist as well as an astrophysicist.